Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything's truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Go there today. It's a remarkable website. We've just redone the whole thing as of April 30th, and there's more there than you probably would want to imagine even. And a real estate website. There's not just one valuation system, but three. If you're looking to find out the value of your home or any other property, it's all there for you. And it's not just limited to Western New York, it's nationwide. So it's a truly unique website for something that's based right here in Western New York. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Greater Albany, Utica, Watertown, and even Phoenix, Arizona, and now also in Boston, Massachusetts. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants, and I mean that they are skilled. I've seen them perform some miracles lately. And ask to work with them to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants. And that's a guarantee of ours, especially in today's very competitive real estate financing marketplace. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's world, where we've got a shortage of inventory available for sale, if there's a house out there that you find that you like, you want to make sure that you can compete with the very best terms of any offer, and the very best, obviously, is all cash. And a mortgage commitment actually is the equivalent. So if you are ready to look for a home, you want to make sure that you go into that process with the strongest equipment, and that's the pre-purchase commitment. Call today, 633-3700, and look for that personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. So check out that low-rate guarantee. It's very important today. And don't forget about the first-ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, all through the markets we serve. All you have to do is dial 716-631-4800 for homes in the western part of the state. We have a separate number in each of the local communities going east. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any of the brokers. And it's a truly unique service. You'll drive by some signs and you'll see 14 phone numbers and all kinds of things on top of it, pictures of real estate agents, and you'd have to stop and take a picture and go home and decipher that picture to try to figure out what's going on that sign. Just remember this number, 631-4800. Doesn't matter what's on that sign. You'll get all the information about that listing, no matter whose listing it is. We're in a very active time in the marketplace, and as I mentioned earlier, there is a shortage of homes available. When we have a very high number of very well-qualified buyers looking for property today, so if you're considering selling, there's probably never been a better time. And there's also more options than you think. One of the things we hear often is that if I sell my house, where am I going to go? Well, that's what a real estate professional is for. And the ones at Hunt Real Estate, we think, are uniquely qualified to help you in that regard. And also, we've got one thing that nobody else has, and it's this very simple phrase that we will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's our seller security plan. So if you've got concerns, you'll want to check that out. It's the greatest way to start the whole process. Available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent, so stop in to one of our many open houses and ask our professionals about that today. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans, and we also support our Buffalo Bisons. The show is broadcast live on WBEN, 9:30 a.m., and if you'd like to participate in today's show, you can call us here in the studio at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, and star 930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls, and you can also text us at 30930, and that's kind of the anonymous way to say what you want to say. So we've got a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is the Comptroller of Erie County, Stefan Mihailu. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning. Isn't technology amazing?
It is.
You know, when it comes to your hotline and the use of the website, I remember my dad was a typewriter repairman, And when I was a kid, every blue moon, I'd go along on service calls, and he'd have to pull out the huge Rand McNally map and plan out where he was going to go. And now, you know, we have GPS. And the same thing with, you know, Hunt Real Estate. I mean, it's I'm sure the technology has allowed you to provide a better service to your customers in no way that was possible even 10 years ago.
It's interesting you mention that, because we look at this whole thing, particularly with the pressure that's on in every industry to cut costs and also deliver service for less money to the consumer. And we have to look long and hard at how technology will assist in that process. But that's a whole new set of issues that we could talk about all morning. And that's not why I invited you on the show today. I did invite you on as Comptroller of Erie County to talk about some of the important issues facing us today. But before we get into those, you know, our listeners probably have heard your name through your various iterations, but walk us back in time a little bit, Stefan, if you would, and tell us how you got into this political world. Most people think probably defines your insanity, but
what's wrong with this guy? Yeah, my whole family fled their Ukrainian farm during World War II and eventually came to America in 1965. Took them a while to get here. They had to save enough money to come here to Buffalo, New York, a very large Polish and Ukrainian community. We had family that came over before them, and they technically sponsored my family to come over. Mm-hmm. My family stayed with them, you know, when they first came to America. Again, as I mentioned, my dad, you know, worked for Remington. I know they're known for their firearms, but they also made typewriters. Mm-hmm. And my dad, you know, was a typewriter repairman. My grandmother worked as a janitor at Mercy Hospital. My grandfather was the maintenance man at Mercy Hospital. And so being the son of immigrants, legal immigrants, my family came here the right way. They filled out paperwork. They had visas. They became citizens. My family came here the right way. And I'm forever grateful to the opportunities, and it may sound a little corny, just of being an American and all the rights and privileges that we have for being an American citizen. And so public service is really important to me, giving back to America and giving back to this country. And so I was an investigative journalist. My beat was the county budget. I knew that county budget like the back of my hand. And I was at a point in my life, I was turning 40, and I said, I don't want to spend the rest of my life talking about what other people are doing. And I saw during the red-green budget crisis that politicians really melted down our government. They didn't serve people the way they should. And it was 2012. The office of Erie County Comptroller came up, and it was perfect for me that I was coming from the private sector. I knew the budget well. I earned a reputation as being a watchdog as a journalist, and then I wanted to do the same in public service. And that's when I ran for comptroller in 2012. I won a special election that year, won a full term in 2013, and again in 2017.
So that brings you up to date in terms of your position today. So I guess a lot of people might find that to be what I would describe as perhaps I guess if people looking at the outside into the role of controller say, well, you know, what do you really do? And then there's a budget director as well that's a political appointee, I believe. So how do you dovetail in with that kind of role, and how, what kind of authority and power do you have vis-a-vis the budget director and obviously the county executive?
Yeah, that's a great question. Erie County is one of the very few counties in New York State that actually has an independently elected comptroller. Most chief financial officers across New York State for counties are appointed by the county executive. We're different in Erie County, and I think it's a great setup where there's an independently elected comptroller who, there's two main functions. You know, there's the accounting function where we borrow on behalf of the county, we bond for the county for road projects, things of that nature. And then there's the audit function where we perform management audits for the county executive. So I monitor and report how the county executive and the budget director and the legislature actually puts together their budget. So that's the role of the independent comptroller. I monitor and report how the county executive and legislature manage the budget. They're the ones that manage it. And so when it comes to my role as Erie County Comptroller, that's exactly what we do. The main function that I really enjoy is the audit function. We love going in to county government and offering different departments ways to better manage their office. And I think that's an important part of the job.
If you say we recommend the following 14 things. What obligation do they have to follow your recommendations?
None. None whatsoever. I actually offer those recommendations to the different departments, and it's wholeheartedly up to them whether they implement them or not. But I do think it's really important to have that check and balance within the walls of county government, because I do believe it keeps a lot of these politicians and all of these departments on their toes, knowing that at any time we can come in and audit their office. And it's not a gotcha thing. You know, we really do work collaboratively with the departments that we audit to say, okay, here's some deficiencies and here's how to make it better. And that's why I think is the important part of our job, is not just to point out problems, but to offer solutions on how to fix them.
How is county government funded? Everybody gets a tax bill. A lot of people listening, the vast majority of listening, get a tax bill. So how is county government funded? Because let me see if I can understand things. If we take 100% of the revenue that's derived from property taxes to the county, my understanding is that Medicaid eats up almost all that. So how then do we fund all the things that you just talked about, all these departments?
That's a great question. You know, when it comes to Medicaid, our bill for Medicaid, Erie County's Medicaid cost in the 2019 budget was $199 million. Think about that. Now, most states across the country, the federal government picks up 50% of the Medicaid bill. The New York State picks up the other 50%. Well, in Albany, in their infinite wisdom, they force the counties to pick up a major portion of that bill, a large percentage of it. And again, 2019, the budget was $199 million. So in many years within Erie County government, what we collect in property taxes, every single penny goes to pay that Medicaid bill. The largest source of revenue for the county is actually sales tax revenue, well north of $400 million. And that sales tax revenue is divvied up between, you know, the Erie County. We have a sales tax agreement going back to, I believe, 1977, where the revenue is actually split with the three cities, school districts, the NFTA, and Erie County. So a lot of individuals think, they look at their property tax bill and say, oh, that's what funds Erie County government. But it's not. It's mostly sales tax revenue. And I've been a strong supporter of passing federal legislation that would not allow New York State to force this unfunded mandate on all of their counties and force us to pay a portion of that Medicaid bill. Because, Peter, we have no say in how New York State spends on Medicaid. We have no say whatsoever on how they spend it, the programs that's offered. But the politicians in Albany shove the bill down my throat and the taxpayers' throat, the people who pay the bill in the first place. And that really does cripple a lot of different counties. And I would make the argument of, you know, and even in the past that we'd said, give that $200 million, 75% of it, give it back to the people that paid the bill in the first place in the form of a tax cut, and then take the other 25% and invest it in our crumbling infrastructure.
Medicaid is a real issue, I think, for places like New York in particular, where we take advantage, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that there are 36 programs under the Medicaid legislation, the national legislation. Most states elect 7 or 8 or 9 of these, including states like California and Texas. Our state elects 33, I believe.
Yeah, it's a huge portion of it. And again, and that's the real problem that I have, is that New York State, you know, think of it as a salad bar. You're right. That's a really great point, Peter. It's a, you know, your Medicaid choices, think of it as a salad bar. And the politicians in Albany pretty much gobble up every single program with Medicaid, and they force us to pay the bill.
And I think the premise was that the national government, federal government, would pay the lion's share of that so that the state could, quote, afford to pick up the difference. And what the state has done, as you actually point out, said, well, we're going to just make sure the local governments pay for a big chunk of that.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate, because if you think of that $200 million number that we pay in our Medicaid bill, I mean, it is far more than the discretionary spending that we have within the walls of Erie County government. We only really control about 10 to 11% of our total, you know, billion-plus dollar budget. I mean, so that $200 million figure is so far ahead of what we spend on our parks, our libraries, Sheriff's Road Patrol, what we pay for road repair. And that's why I was such a strong proponent before, and there was an actual proposed bill in Washington that would have stopped states from passing on that portion of Medicaid to our counties. And I think that would really rejuvenate our local economy even more so. You know, the federal tax cuts have really kickstarted the national economy. There's record low unemployment thanks to the federal tax cuts that passed in Washington. There's more money in the pockets of income generators. And that's why I strongly support that proposal, that if New York State was banned from passing on that cost to the counties, that we should give it right back to the people that paid the bill in the first place, well, and that's taxpayers.
Let's look at the national law on the tax situation today and what it's really done to places like New York. I agree, the benefit that's derived to the entire economy, that has been derived by the entire economy, has been documented and well discussed, and obviously there's points of view on that. But let's assume that it's been a net positive for the average human being, family in this country today. In New York State, it hasn't been quite so good, because in that bill was the limit on the deductibility of state and local taxes to $10,000. And that's why I asked you about Medicaid, and that's why I asked you about kind of local costs of government, because, and more, and Medicaid being a huge chunk of it, it's really not a local cost. It's a cost that's just been pushed to us. That's was a decision made in Albany, blah, blah, blah. But the point is that states like New York have been hurt more, or it makes the states with lower taxes that much more attractive when you pass a nationwide bill that lowers taxes for everybody. And so we become less competitive as a state. And as I can see, and you see it from a different perspective, all the state itself has done is to complain about that.
That's correct. I mean, look at our population loss, too. You know, going from July 1st, 2017 to July 1st, 2018, in a one-year period, we lost approximately 48,510 residents in New York State. People are leaving because of those high taxes. 48,510 people over a one-year period left New York State. And Peter, we're...
Is that a net number, or is
yes,
that...
Yes, okay. That absolutely is. And then we were actually meeting... I go on business tours on Wednesdays. We meet with income generators. And there was a factory in Lancaster that wanted to expand to 1,000 employees. They wanted to do that. They approached New York State. And again, I'm paraphrasing on what this CEO had told me. And what was shared with me was New York State said, okay, we want you to stay here. And when you make that announcement that you're going to stay and have your 1,000 employees here, then the governor's office will be more than glad to come and tout you as a great economic engine of the county. So at a trade show, someone from North Carolina in the governor's office approached them and said, hey, you know, we understand you may want to expand. Guess what we're going to do? We're going to fly you down on the governor's jet to North Carolina. We're going to show you numerous warehouses and factories where we're going to go. We're going to pay for it, and you're going to lease it to us from a dollar a year. And this company, sure enough, took their 1,000 employees. And they kept their presence in Western New York with the current employees they have. But for their expansion, they went down and said, okay, we're going to lease this factory for a dollar. Now, this is where I have a problem with New York State, where they pick and choose winners and losers because of the tax climate. You know, you look at Tesla, where we're spending $750 million on one company. They're not meeting their target goals. And if Musk decides to pack up shop and leave, then New York State is left holding the bag of this massive factory in South Buffalo. Or if you took that $750 million, it even took 750 existing companies that have been paying taxes, and like that company that went to North Carolina to say, what can we do to keep you here? And I think that's the problem with New York State, is that we're overtaxed, overregulated, and all of these income generators are leaving other states where there's lower taxes and less regulation.
Well, we could go on that for forever, and we've talked a lot about that on this show going back, you know, to the days we started this show a long time ago. But it's not just the number of people that are leaving the state. It's who in that number are leaving. It's not, unfortunately, the lowest rung on the economic or financial ladder. It's the highest rung, because those are the people that are most impacted by a move, not the people that are, frankly, benefiting by the many programs in the state. Why would they go anywhere? And I don't blame them. That makes perfect sense. But we're kind of stuck where we are. And I just wondered, we've only got a few seconds before we go to break, is there any movement that you see from your position in county government to make any kind of substantive changes at the state level that would impact our competitive position vis-a-vis other states.
I think it's going to get worse. You know, elections have consequences. The New York City Democrats have basically taken over, and we're going to see our policies moving to the left.
And we're going to go talk more about that and other things after these very important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. Mortgage rates have recently dropped, and now is an ideal time to purchase a home and lock in a low rate. If you're already a homeowner, let's discuss your current mortgage. There may never be a better time to reduce your rate or access the equity in your home by refinancing with Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 for a free, no obligation consultation.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And as you explore the whole world of real estate, many of you will go to a national website, one that may even have an app on your phone, and I would suspect a significant percentage of the people listening to the show would have such an app. But just try out HuntRealEstate.com. You can reach it. It's all mobile-enabled and very easy to use. Just check it out and see if there's not all the answers to your real estate questions, or at least some perspective on just about anything you might want to know about real estate there. And I can assure you that the data is accurate. And that's one thing that the national websites have no obligation to provide to you, and that's accuracy. You'll find, for example, on some sites, homes that have been sold for 6, 8, 10 months. That's not the case on our website. Everything is up to date. It's updated every hour, so there's no chance that the data that you're getting is going to be inaccurate or untimely, which is critical.
That's a good point about that. I just want to chime in about that,
sure.
your app and your website, that a lot of times, you know, my wife and I bought a house 2 years ago. We're in the Village of Hamburg, and you know, sometimes you do. You venture on these national apps, these national websites, and then you look at it, and then you actually make a phone call and look, wait a minute, that house sold 3 years ago. It's no longer on the market. So it's a good service that you guys provide, because you're right. You don't want to, especially when it comes in the hot market that we have right now, you don't want to have bad information. You need every asset that you can when it comes to buying a home. And you're absolutely right. I know from experience that a lot of these national websites or apps, they're not factually correct.
They have no obligation to be accurate. All they have, they just display whatever they're given, and but whether or not the information is taken down in a timely fashion is totally irrelevant to them. There's no consequence if they don't. Whereas a serious consequence for us if we don't.
Well, especially as a consumer too. I mean, information is king, especially when it comes to real estate. That your time is limited, especially houses that are on the market. And you know this, of all people, sometimes these houses are on the market for a day or 2 days. And if you're browsing information on some national website or app and it's wrong, you're wasting time finding inventory that's actually available.
Yeah, it is a waste of time. And even if you Google a property, which is something lots of people do, myself included sometimes, if it's not for sale, you're going to get some data on that property. If it is for sale, it doesn't, again, there's no obligation in particular for Google to make sure that information is accurate. Whereas every day, every hour, we're making sure that our information is accurate. And thank you for mentioning
it.
Anyway, this show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and I encourage you to try them today. 633-3700. Ask about one of our many programs, including our pre-purchase commitment, even our warm home loan, and even the program that allows you to effectively buy the before and live the after, which means that you can effectively roll the cost of all your home improvements into your mortgage, which gives you a definitive number as opposed to kind of a money pit scenario that many people find when they buy a house and maybe they've put all the cash they have available into the down payment, and then they find out there's 15 things wrong with the house that they've got to repair, and there's just not cash available. This program, Buy the Before, Live the After, corrects all that. Available only through Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And remember that seller security plan, that we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's available only through Hunt Real Estate ERA Professional. And visit one of our many open houses today. And in the studio with me today, as you've already heard in this segment, is Stefan Mihailu, the Comptroller of Erie County. And we've been having a kind of a wide-ranging subject matter discussion on issues that relate to our county, and specifically as it relates to taxpayers. What about, I guess, county tax bills are due in July, are they not?
Yeah, they're due actually in it depends on the municipality, right? Between larger towns, smaller towns, yeah. So that really rotates between February, March, depending on what that is. My mortgage is in escrow, and all of a sudden it went up. And mm-hmm. I called the bank and I says, well, wait a minute. We keep hearing how, tax rates are being held and they're being reduced. And, well, wait a minute. Mine actually went up. So for a lot of you folks across Erie County, I would say, you hear politicians all the time talking about, well, we're holding the line. But, the rubber meets the road on your actual tax bill. Mm-hmm. Another example is our roads. We hear politicians all the time talk about, well, we're spending X amount of dollars on your roads. I would tell anyone in Erie County, the state of our county roads, drive on them. What do you think? And that's one of the big things over the past few weeks that people talk to me about are one, at the state level, licenses for illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. That's a huge issue. But the other one's the conditions of our county roads. In my very humble opinion, we should be cutting taxes across the board in Erie County, whether it's our municipalities, the county. Spending is up countywide, going back about 7 years, by about $120, $125 million in some respects. And I think a lot of that money should be given back to hardworking taxpayers in the form of a tax cut. But we also should invest in our crumbling infrastructure. And looking at the state, I always say elections have consequences. Elections have consequences. And at the state level, a lot of the New York City Democrats have taken over New York State. And what do? They pass a bill that allows illegal immigrants to have a driver's license. I think that's wrong. My family came here the right way. They became United States citizens. And I think it's wrong that New York State is putting the rights of illegal immigrants over citizens.
I want to come back to that, but
sure.
Don't you think that's really just a finger in the eye to the president? I mean, long story short, because he's being portrayed as anti-immigrant, and so the other side is simply saying, let's see how friendly to immigrants we can be. But we'll come back to that.
Sure.
But the issue that seems to be of interest to our listeners has to do with the Medicaid issue. We have a text that says, wrong, Stefan. Other states serve a salad bar. New York State offers up a full buffet. He says he can't spell smorgasbord. Okay, I get that. So
it's pretty funny, actually.
I think he's right. But we have two callers online. First is John from Tonawanda. John, how can we help you?
With Medicaid issue, we have a...
Why don't you turn your radio down? Are you there, John? John, sorry. Okay, got to go to the next call. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter. Hey, Stefan.
John, you're famous, more famous than I am in Erie County. John from Rochester.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Medicaid. If the localities are picking up, in New York State, the localities have to pick up a lot of the Medicaid bills versus other states. Why doesn't we take action to remedy that? I don't understand it.
That's a great question, John. And the problem that we have is that the only people that can change that potentially is, we tried this with Obamacare and the federal government. We actually tried to pass a bill that was proposed in Congress that would ban states from doing that. Now, the state of New York could actually change the law themselves as well, but there is no way Governor Cuomo or the Senate or the Assembly would ever say, okay, enough is enough. I know counties are hurting. We're going to take on that portion of the Medicaid bill. And I've heard a number that it's almost $4 billion in New York State mm-hmm. that they would have to pick up. And I'd say, fine, you're the ones who are spending it. You're the ones who are choosing the full buffet of Medicaid benefits, and then you should pay the bill in the first place. So, John, from Rochester, that's a great question. We did try that in Congress at the federal level, and hopefully there's some traction there where we could get rid of that Obamacare mandate. Our Medicaid bill, again, we mentioned this before, by law, we have to cover the losses of ECMC. We actually split, it's called IGT, Intergovernmental Transfer Bill, or payment. The total is actually $100 million. And we split half of that with the federal government. So that's $50.4 million right away. That's out of the county budget. And that's just for losses at ECMC.
Really?
Yeah, it's a huge chunk of change.
We also have a texter, Stefan, who says, how can state law trump, excuse the pun, he says, a federal law?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that actually, that question goes back to driver's licenses for illegal immigrants, because the way the law is written, they're asking county clerks to basically violate federal law by granting a driver's license to an illegal immigrant, but yet following the state law that says you have to give them a driver's license. So from my perspective...
So stop there for a second. The state passed a law that's in contradiction to federal law.
That's correct.
For example, legalization of marijuana.
Yes.
Which we know is just basically being ignored at the national level in favor of the state law, which creates a whole other set of issues. But
right.
So go. Let's talk about the license thing now. The federal government says you can't issue a driver's license or anything like that. I presume it's not just driver's license.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, the federal law. Obviously, let's go back to the very beginning of the issue. Their presence here in the United States, by nature, they are breaking the law. They are, and this is a federal term. Whether it's the IRS or Justice Department, they use the term illegal alien.
Right.
They are here illegally, period, and we should never reward that behavior no matter what. But the way the state law is written, they're telling county clerks, you upheld the Constitution when you swore an oath of office. And the federal law basically says you cannot facilitate someone being here illegally. They're breaking the law as an illegal alien. But the state law that passed basically has county clerks ignore that federal law and is forcing them to give licenses to illegal immigrants. And you know, I've said this from the very beginning. You know, we've heard people who support this ill-advised law say this is all about economics. We're going to generate revenue by having these individuals register a license and register a car and pay insurance. Baloney. I think their true intent, these politicians in New York City, is to get people to register to vote and vote illegally in elections, to hijack elections, period. I don't think it has anything to do with economics. And county clerks are in a very difficult spot because the governor has threatened that if they don't give licenses to illegal immigrants, he's going to remove them from office. Mickey Kearns, our clerk, had said point blank, I will never, ever issue a driver's license to an illegal immigrant, because it does open up a negative Pandora's box of options once someone has that license in their hand. It's a gateway document that someone can take that driver's license and then say, okay, I'm going to get a hunting license, which in turn means that someone can actually purchase a gun who's here illegally in New York State. When it comes to filling out a voter registration card, all you need to do is give a driver's license number and then check an affidavit on the box that says, sure, I'm a citizen. Well, if these individuals are illegally in the first place, they can lie on that application and then they're registered to vote. And who's going to check that?
Mm-hmm,
who
right.
knows across New York State, or motor voter, even if they hit a touchscreen and they're automatically registered to vote and someone's an illegal alien. So I'm very concerned about maintaining the integrity of our elections. And I want to make sure that illegal aliens don't register to vote, because I think that's the true intent of a lot of people who support this bill. And I think it's wrong. My family came here the right way. They became citizens. They became productive members of society. And I wholeheartedly support legal immigration, doing it mm-hmm. the right way. What I cannot support is giving a driver's license to an illegal alien and then, to some extent, rewarding that illegal behavior by saying, well, we're going to get a lot of revenue because of car registrations. I think that's baloney. We also hear, when it comes to people who support this ill-advised law, saying, well, they're going to get insurance. Well, I don't think they will, and I think it actually harms the taxpayers of Erie County and New York State.
So the whole thing boils down to voters.
Absolutely.
And I think there's valid case to that, and that's certainly what's being said all over the press. And we'll be right back with more from our House Steers after these important messages. If you called in, stay on the line. We'll get your call right after these messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. Mortgage rates have recently dropped, and now is an ideal time to purchase a home and lock in a low rate. If you're already a homeowner, let's discuss your current mortgage. There may never be a better time to reduce your rate or access the equity in your home by refinancing with Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 for a free, no obligation consultation.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. There's all kinds of homeownership services on our website. Check it out. It's only one of its kind, including all the properties available, not just here in Western New York, but all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts through our links. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today for one of our many programs, 633-3700, and speak with one of our mortgage consultants. It'll be well worth your time. And you really do need a consultation when it comes to home financing, because there's so many ads on television today and every other place, Instagram, everywhere you go, there's ads about this mortgage program or that mortgage program specifically designed for you, but they don't know you. Have a consultant really evaluate your particular situation at Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. I'm in the studio today with Stefan Mihailu, the controller of the county of Erie. Before we get back to our topic here, I just want to mention a couple of things. Yesterday was the funeral of a man named Sam Zemsky. Had Mr. Zemsky not come here and bought a company called Russer Foods in 1969, there would be no such thing as Larkinville today, because by coming here, he brought his son here, Howard Zemsky, and then his daughter-in-law, Leslie Zemsky, and those two people alone have done so much for our community. And had Sam Zemsky not done what he did in 1969, this would be a vastly different community, and I think we owe him a debt of gratitude. And some of us had a chance to thank him, I guess, by our presence yesterday.
Yeah, that was very close to my old neighborhood. I grew up on the east side, a little closer to William and Fillmore, but my old Catholic church, the original one, was St. Patrick's on Emsley Street. And Seneca and Emsley right there, there used to be, dating myself a little bit, my very first savings account was at that Marine Midland branch at Seneca and Emsley. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, the Franciscan Friars at St. Patrick's had an actual thrift store in the Larkin Building. Mm-hmm. And what they've done with that neighborhood is just incredible. Private sector investment. They've really turned around that whole corridor, and it became the hub of the renewal for not just the Larkin Building, but the entire neighborhood, all the other different companies that are coming in, and even over the bridge, you know, the Seneca Babcock Community Center. There's going to be a new community center this summer there for the entire neighborhood. So thanks to their private sector investment, they've really turned that neighborhood around. And I know firsthand because I grew up there.
And the offshoot of that has been, in terms of Howard's own career, his presence as the chairman of the Empire State Development Corporation, which, of course, is largely responsible for the investments, many investments that have been made at the state level here in Western New York and all across the state. And now he's resigned from that position to become the chairman of the organization, which will be, I think, a great benefit to Western New York going forward. Also, the life of Lynn Mullane will be celebrated this morning, as a matter of fact, right now. She, of course, was a pillar of the town of Amherst political community and also a member of the Damon College Board of Trustees, working with me there, and a very, very fine person whom I've known almost all my life, and we're sorry to see her passing, but she's contributed greatly to our community. Back to our topic at hand here, Stefan, which is the county and our finances. And we were talking about the issue of Medicaid, and that could be, again, we take the whole day to discuss that alone. But just to kind of wrap that one up a little bit, we've got a caller on the line who wants to talk about that. But just to wrap that up, is there anything you think can be done? Is there anything besides people just totally changing their political perspective for us to think that there might be some hope in this? Because it's an anchor on our whole financial situation here in the county.
It is, and the only way we would change it is by elections. You know, we have the power to vote, and I think that's the only way to change it in New York State is to actually elect like-minded individuals who want to get rid of this Medicaid mandate for counties in New York State and someone who has the political courage to do so. You know, again, the problem at New York State is I don't know of any politician in Albany that says, sure, let's relieve the counties of hundreds of millions of dollars in Medicaid spending, and we'll pick up the bill ourselves because we're the ones that pay for it in the first place. We're the ones that choose the actual programs. So voting matters. Elections matter, and elections have consequences. And so I think like-minded individuals on this issue need to band together and in 2020 elect representatives that have the courage and the will to change it, whether it's at the state level or at the federal level.
Isn't all voting, though, fundamentally based upon an individual's perception of their own interests?
That's true.
So say, for example, I'm an illegal alien. I'm here. I got into this country somehow, and I'm here. And it's pretty tough to find me, so I'm going about my life. And I'm not saying this critically of these people. They probably came here for very valid reasons in
right.
many cases. But now they've got... They are able to take advantage of many of the programs available to our citizens as well, legal citizens. So wouldn't it be in my best interest now to be able to somehow be part of the system that's affecting me, and maybe if I can do a workaround through a license and then I can vote? Doesn't that kind of change everything?
It's scary, actually, that if illegal aliens with a driver's license register to vote, and you're right, their interest is having a bevy of government programs that benefits their self-interest and certainly not the collective of taxpayers in New York State. I mentioned, you know, yours truly being a big supporter of the Second Amendment. You know, I have a concealed carry permit, member of the NRA. I feel very strongly about supporting Second Amendment rights in New York State. And there's roughly a little more than 4 million gun owners in New York State. And I don't care if they're Republican, Democrat, conservative, independents, working families. I don't care what their political affiliation is. But if every single one of those gun owners in New York State registered to vote and voted their conscience on Second Amendment issues in New York State, we might have a different governor. We might have different representation. So organizing and registering to vote is so important in New York State.
We've got, apparently we've hit a nerve out there. We've got about 1 million callers here. So let's take a couple calls. This is Rick from Clarence. Rick, how can we help you? Rick, are you there?
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning, Rick.
First of all, Peter, I want to tell you how much I enjoy the show. It's probably the best talk show I've listened to over time, so thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Rick. Appreciate that.
My question is really kind of both topics this morning, taxation as it relates to road quality and the impact on real estate. And I live, have property on Tonawanda Creek Road in Clarence Center.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tonawanda Creek Road has been closed now 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be having impact on real estate in the area, and it's just really sad as a taxpayer not to have that taken care of mm-hmm. or steadfast manner, and any feedback would be great.
Well, let me respond, if I can, to the just the general effect of taxation on real estate values. And going back in time to the county executive race of 1997, we actually worked on a series of calculations that helped people understand how much. And something you said earlier, going back to what you said, how much $1 or $1,000 of tax increase, how that impacts, how little taxes have to go up to negatively affect the value of your property by $1,000. And this is how it calculates. The value of $1,000 of mortgage money, everything's based on affordability. So if I can only afford X number of dollars in mortgage money, if for $1,000 of those mortgage dollars, it's about, say, $4 or $5 a month on a 30-year mortgage. So if my taxes go up $4 to $5 a month, $60 a year, I'm losing $1,000 in value. And oftentimes people tell me that I bought my house 25 years ago. If I'd bought my house in California at the same time, it would have been maybe a difference in value. But right now that house would be worth 10 times what my house is worth here in Buffalo. And the difference really, boil it down, is two things. Number one is consumer demand, how many people work in that community, how many people live there, growth of the community itself. And secondly, it's taxation. So to Rick's point, I mean, if his road isn't working in front of his house, I mean, right. That's a serious problem.
It is. And our infrastructure is really crumbling in Erie County. It's one of the biggest complaints that I get is I'm spending all this money in taxes. I'm sending all this money to the government. And what am I receiving in return? And again, I'll tell anyone who is listening, let any politician talk about the money they're investing in roads. Drive down a county road and let that be the judge of whether or not you think government is working for you.
Well, there's other measures too that we could look at, but certainly if I'm bouncing around through dodging potholes and damaging my car along the way, that's a pretty good sign.
And it's also an added expense.
Right.
You know, our mechanics, I think, are doing very well
mm-hmm,
under
sure.
county roads. But, you know, if someone's driving, they get a bent rim or even more significant damage. That's money that's coming out of a family's pocket when it comes to the conditions of our county roads.
No question about it. We've got a bunch of other calls. This is John. I think this is the same John who unfortunately was had his radio on. John, are you with us?
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good. How are you? How can we help you?
Well, I'll tell you, this Medicaid problem has been around for forever, and I'm just wondering, you know, I appreciate Stefan's attitude towards it, but can't all the counties get together and just boycott Albany or something, do something a little more radical, you know, drop something hot and messy in the governor's lap, so to speak? And
well, let me just, that's a very good question, John. I'm gonna just kind of twist it a little bit here. He brings up a good point. You do talk with your counterparts in other parts of the state, do you not?
We sure do on a regular basis.
And how can you act collectively, or do you?
We could litigate. I mean, that's, you know, there's talk of litigation pertaining to the issue of driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. So we can certainly litigate that.
Is that likely or not?
It's very unlikely because, again, you know, we see there's no appetite at the state level for this, and there was no appetite at the federal level to change the law. It's unfortunate that it's the cost of doing business in New York State. It's very unfortunate, and it's really crushing taxpayers in Erie County.
We've only got a couple minutes left, and I'm sorry there's a bunch of callers we're not going to get to, because I would like you to kind of put a bow on this whole topic and also mention anything else that you believe to be critical to taxpayers in our county today.
Yeah, I think our taxes are too high. You know, government spending is up. Our roads are an absolute mess in Erie County, and I think the taxpayers deserve better. It's actually scary to what's happening in New York State. A lot of folks are talking to me and saying, you know what, I don't recognize our state anymore. You know, I have a young family. You know, my wife and I, we have a 13-year-old daughter, a 16-month-old son, and a baby on the way next month. If it weren't for family, and this is a view that's shared amongst a lot of people, I don't know if we would want to stay in New York State. And it's very unfortunate. You know, some of my wife's best friends, they live in different portions of the country, and they come here once or twice a year to visit.
Let me just interrupt you there. My issue is I want us to be able to compete and win for jobs, for the best people in this country. I want this to be a better and better community, not to compete at the lowest possible level, which is a giveaway level. Is there any reason for us to think that elected officials like you, besides the voting process that you described, but in terms of their day-to-day activities, that they can do anything to help that situation?
I'm optimistic about it. I'm one that's never going to be a pessimist and say, I'm just going to fold up my tent and quit. And that's the whole reason why I got into public service, to make our community better and to fight the good fight. I think with Nick Langworthy as the new New York State Republican chair, I think he's going to be very aggressive when it comes to electing like-minded elected officials that want to reduce government spending and want to cut taxes in New York State so that businesses not just survive, but actually thrive here in New York State.
And I think that's a hopefully something that will be on every politician's mind, because hopefully we can elevate the title of politician to the title of statesman, which is a big difference. And we've talked about that on the show many times, and I know you have weighed in on that as well. Stefan Mihailo, Comptroller of Erie County, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank all our listeners and those of you that chose to participate. We'll be back again next week at the same time. Enjoy the 4th of July holiday safely, and remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate New York is hunt country.